That's the sound of bagpipes, played at a Kodiak fisherman's memorial last August, held every year to remember those who had died in the past year. Many in the crowd at the harbor were friends and family of fishermen who went down with the Scandies Rose, a crab boat that sank on New Year's Eve, December 2019. Only two men survived. At the memorial, the bell tolled for five of the crew who went down with the ship, including the captain.
December 31st, 2019. Fishing vessel Scandies Rose. Art Gnasius. December 31st, 2019. Fishing vessel Scandies Rose. Brock Rainey. December 31st, 2019. Fishing vessel, Scandies Rose, Seth Soren A. Russo Gano. December 31st, 2019, fishing vessel, Scandies Rose, David L. Cobbin. December 31st, 2019, fishing vessel Scandies Rose, Gary D. Cobbin, Jr.
More than a year now since the sinking, the Coast Guard is holding hearings to find out why the Scandies Rose sank. The week has been filled with testimony from an undersea exploration company that went down to the bottom of the ocean to get a look at the ship, to engineering experts who testified about the impact of ice buildup on the ship's stability. Perhaps the most compelling testimony came from one of the survivors, John Lawler, who was a new member of the crew. He told the hearing that when the crew went through a practice drill with the skipper, Captain Gary Cobbin, hours before the sinking, he had a strange feeling.
There's all sorts of like superstition things that lead up to this, but like even the one that key point there when we were going through the safety drills, you know, Gary made this comment about how you don't leave the boat leaves you. And there's just all these like references to like bad news. And I knew we were leaving into a storm. And it just didn't feel right. Nothing about it felt right.
The first real warning of trouble came on New Year's Eve. Lawler and his shipmate, Dean Gribble, were getting ready to bed down for the night.
Dean comes in the room, hops up in his bunk, and he's laying there for a little bit, bullshitting. I'm just about to nod off. And we were never, like, listing a little bit at all. It was trim, good to go. But then all of a sudden, I rolled into my bunk. And just this sheer terror comes over me.
Lawler says that he ran up to the deck where he found the captain in a state of panic.
I don't know how to explain it to anybody. It's just that gut wrench that this is not good. Like there's no coming back from this. Like we are sinking now.
Lawler said he was in such a state of panic himself, he can't remember what other crew members were doing at the time. His focus was trying to get his survival suit on as the ship rocked.
Still trying to get my zipper up. Couldn't get my zipper up. And the wind's just howling out there. There's ice all over the rails. And I just remember hearing Dino yell at me, "Johnny!" Like loud. I mean, I don't want to yell at you guys, but I turn around and he goes, "What are we doing?" And I don't know what we're doing. "We're going for a swim." That's all I could say. And I told him I couldn't get my zipper up. And he started freaking out, trying to help me. But I couldn't help anybody. There was not enough time to help anybody. Everyone had to help themselves.
The words of the captain earlier echoed, "You don't leave the boat leaves you." And all he could think of was staying with the boat until the last possible moment.
Sat up for a second, bashing back and forth, hear steel. I remember I was so stupid, but I was like, the movies swim away from the boat, and I was looking at the boat, paddling backwards as hard as I could. And then 1 second, it just, like a rocket, just down, gone. Nothing but silence, it's me, the ocean. And I say the ocean like nicely, it was very violent that night.
So John Lawler is in the water. He has no idea whether anyone else survived. And now we have KMXT's Dylan Simard to join us to take the story from here. Dylan has been covering this Coast Guard hearing since it started at Monday. It starts every day at 7 o'clock in the morning, lasts all day long. So Dylan, can you tell us what happens next as Lawler is being tossed in the waves in the darkness?
Yeah, so Lawler is in the water, and he is convinced that he is in the last moments of his life. He's paddling backward. He's just trying to keep his head above water. To his recollection, the seas are at 25 feet, which is, I mean, if you're in seas of that weather, on a boat, you're getting tossed around. If you're in the water, I can't even imagine what it's like. So as almost a miracle, he hears Gribble yelling at him while he's in the water. And he turns and he sees that there's a life raft, and he swims several dozen meters, I believe, through these seas, which is quite difficult in a survival suit. They're not easy to swim in. What they do is they if you fall into Bering Sea water exposed without any sort of environmental protection, it can kill you in minutes, but the survival suits can extend that period up significantly. So he clambers into the raft, and there he is with Gribble, and they both spread out in the raft. They get to the opposite sides, and they're getting tossed in these seas around 25 feet. And they're just talking about how for them, this is a new year unlike any other. They're wondering how other people are celebrating right now. They're talking about their plans for the future. They see another raft out in the distance they can see a light. They don't know if there's anyone in it, but they're holding on to hope. And at several points during this time, Lawler feels that he keeps on getting tricked in a way. He thinks that he hears the helicopter, but it's the roaring of the sea. And after 4 hours, over which it went from 10 o'clock in 2019 and rolled over into the new year, the Coast Guard eventually found the light for the other raft. And they drop a rescue diver down, and there's nobody in it. And John Lawler can see the lights for this helicopter, and he grabs out of the light on their life raft wasn't working. It just wasn't on. But he has in the emergency kit that's on the life raft a flashlight, and he goes to the door, unzips it, and he starts covering and uncovering it rapidly with his hand, blinking at them. And they see that light from several hundred meters away. They send a rescue swimmer over, and they manage to get them out.
Okay, so let's have John Lawler tell that last part leading up to the rescue.
And I kept telling Dino, I think I see something. I think I see something. There's someone here. I swear there's someone here. Oh, sure, you sure? And then that light went from right about water level and just shot up. And that's when I knew there was a helicopter. It came flying, and I was shining a flashlight at it the whole time, hoping that someone was going to see us, because we didn't have a light in our canopy, and they must have saw the light, because after they shot up, they were hovering over us, and that's the most beautiful sound I've ever heard in my life. The rotors on that chopper just the water spray coming out.
Wow, and he wrapped up that testimony by saying, actually apologizing that he wasn't a good storyteller, apologized that he couldn't really convey all that they were feeling and experiencing. What was it like to sit and listen to this testimony, Dylan?
It was hard. He was clearly very, very traumatized by this event. He was tearful. He took several breaks. I mean, I can only imagine how horrible the experience of that night must have been. And even when he's in the water, when the two men finally get into the life raft together, they're completely convinced that they're not going home that night. But
So did we hear from Dino Gribben this week?
Not just yet. That's coming up, I believe, on Monday of next week. The schedule is tentative, though.
You know, it's very
we will be in the second week.
It was very interesting listening to what John Lawler had to say because, you know, earlier he was talking about how he was frightened and just a little bit nervous about the forecast. And he felt that he just couldn't express any reservations because he was a newbie on the crew.
Well, certainly it was known that the conditions for that night were going to be some pretty rough seas, but some of the testimony, they're not the only boat that left Kodiak along that route that night. There were two other boats, I believe, that left around the same time.
So can you tell us what the Coast Guard is hoping to find out? Because there was a lot of testimony this week from experts on ice buildup, how that's regulated a ship's capacity to be able to carry so much ice before it affects its stability. And also there was an expert that testified that had gone down and looked at the Scandies. I mean, what was that like to hear about?
Yes, so they sent they didn't dive, but I believe it's a diving and undersea survey company, but they didn't send like people diving in cold water suits. So they were using some variety of surface scan sonar, and they were able to ultimately get an image of the Scandies Rose on the bottom, and then they deployed what's called an ROV, which is sort of like a drone. It's tethered by a cable. You send it into the water, and it can go down and maneuver, and they were ultimately able to go and get video footage of the Scandies Rose lying on the bottom of the seafloor.
Well, the Coast Guard was very specific, kind of warning families about the nature of this testimony. Did they find any remains when they went down?
Yes. So they were surveying like the exterior of the ship. They were making what they believed they were attempting to determine, you know, at what side of the boat had landed onto the ocean floor first, if there was any sort of evidence for what might be an obvious cause of the casualty at sea, what caused like the ultimate listing. They were also asked if they could find remains, though I should say here they're not responsible for determining the identity of remains. They're simply charged with seeing if they can discover any. And they said that they were able to find two bodies looking through the external glass of the wheelhouse, and they had a third possible, which was a survival suit that was located in the wheelhouse, but they couldn't determine if there was somebody in it or not.
You know, some of this was expected, you know, this kind of testimony that would be very disturbing, very painful to the families. Was anything especially surprising about what you've heard this week?
Well, one of the most interesting things that may have a sort of far-reaching impact is that there were problems with the stability report on the Scandies Rose. But more than just that, they had testimony from many naval architects. I think they've heard from at least five naval architects over the past few days. And these naval architects were saying that, so naval architects are responsible for designing boats, and they also provide what's called a stability report for boats. which you can think of as sort of an engineering assessment of how stable the craft is, how much weight it can bear, what kind of seas it can weather. It also accounts for things like if you're developing ice on your boat, it tells you how much ice you can have safely before you have to send your crew members out with 6-pound sledgehammers and start smashing ice off of the top of racks of crab pots. So the problems that might be more widespread with the way that this math is being done is that there was testimony from three naval architects in particular who were saying that they have a serious problem with the way that this is mathed out. So the way that icing is calculated is that, imagine that you have a crab boat, and on its deck are a series of crab pots stacked in this huge mass. So the way that the engineers calculate the way that ice might form on it, I should say that when these boats are going into the water, into rough seas, into cold temperatures, some of the sea spray will come up as a mist and then freeze rapidly. I've heard one person say, as if by magic, and instantly turn into hard ice onto these crab pots. And water is extremely heavy. This adds weight, which is going to lower the center of mass on a boat. But so the problems with the way that this is calculated is that the way that the engineers look at it is they think of it like a shoebox. And what they do is they do a surface area calculation for how much ice is developing. They take the sides and the top of this huge stack of crab pots. The problem is that these crab pots are essentially giant constructs of mesh. They're building ice inside of that structure, meaning that they're taking a look at this weight from the perspective of surface area when they should be looking at volume. But the problems get worse. The way that they do these calculations is they assume, one of the testifying naval architects said that he would guess that it's around 300 pounds. That's a complete guess. They have absolutely no information on how much weight is actually building up. Or at least perhaps it's not a complete guess. We actually can't say what the accuracy is because there's essentially no research done on that topic whatsoever. There's no standard set for these engineers to assume how heavy these crab pots are once they start forming ice on them, how much weight is added to them.
So, Dylan, what are the implications for fishing boats all over Alaska? Although a lot of them don't go out into the Bering Sea, you know, where there are icy conditions, but why is this something that the Coast Guard is very interested in knowing more about?
So the stability report, when it's done, the naval architect also provides a set of instructions to the ship's master. And these instructions include things like how much ice can you bear before you're in deep trouble? And they also include items such as this is the maximum number of crab pots you can safely operate. And these instructions are also done for insurance purposes. So they're considered, you know, your safe operating standard. And they often include these instructions on icing. The problem is that if they can't get a calculation on that, then in theory, you could have a crab boat going out with more pots on it than might be considered safe.
And right now, they have maybe no way of knowing how unsafe they might be then.
Well, these boats aren't rolling over all the time. It's not as if these craft are significantly more dangerous than previously assumed. And it should be said that if you're having issues like icing building up over time on the sides of the boat that are putting weight on one side that might ultimately produce a listing effect that might tilt your boat onto its side, that only happens at certain times of the year. But with that said, it means that these crab boats may be bearing more weight than they actually should be for the standards that we have for safety.
So what's a sign from you watching this hearing and following the proceedings that the Coast Guard is really zeroing in on icing and the impact of boat stability?
So the Marine Board commissioned a study on the Polar Star, which is the Coast Guard icebreaker that just went out, or rather just came back on its most recent voyage to the Arctic. And what they did was they put a crab pot on the deck of the boat and tried to see how much ice they could have accumulating on it. So what they did was they hosed it down with fresh water and observed the effects of it freezing. Now, evidently, this is the water that's getting splashed onto the decks of crab boats is salt water, and also it's not being sprayed with a hose, it's sea spray. But when they did this experiment, one of the engineers had his estimate of 300 pounds of ice. The crab pots are 1,000 pounds, the ones that they were estimating for. So he was assuming that the final weight of this crab pot would be around 1,300 pounds. It turns out that it actually maxed out the scale the Coast Guard was using at 3,000 pounds, meaning that there were at least around 2 tons of ice that had formed on just one crab pot.
Oh my goodness, 2 tons of ice on one crab pot. I mean, they just look like little wire chicken cages without ice.
Yep. And they can bear quite a bit of ice on them. Now, granted, this is a study of one crab pot that's being sprayed with fresh water from a hose. But this is as close as we have right now to any sort of estimate on how much ice weight they're actually bearing. So what these naval architects ultimately called for is that the Coast Guard should partner with other organizations to see if they can do a study on how ice forms and how the weight would be modified as close to the functional equivalent as possible, getting a whole mass of these crab pots together and seeing how much weight they accumulate with ice.
So hopefully this research will save someone's life down the road and make fishermen perhaps even more cautious about going out in icy conditions. You know, this thing was live streamed. You could watch all these hearings online. And of course, it was kind of like watching a never-ending marathon of Zoom meetings. So what was it like for you to sit through the whole thing?
Well, it was certainly interesting. I mean, normally for hearings like this, if you're covering them as a reporter, you would be going in person and sitting in the room that this is being done. But I've been in my apartment staring at a computer screen watching it happen. So it's been different in that regard.
But you can bet that many people, fishing communities across the state, are tuning into this.
Yeah, there are there are viewership statistics on the site that say that there are hundreds of people who are watching live and many hundreds more who watch after each one of these testimonies, which are then saved by the Coast Guard for later viewing.
So next week, what is on the schedule?
Well, the big item is, of course, the testimony from Dean Gribble, which I believe will be happening Monday. And ultimately, it's interesting because they have a significant block of time for follow-up questions, and I would expect to hear more testimony from naval architects, but who knows? I mean, it really could go in any direction. We're only halfway through this.
So what happens after this? How long do we wait to find out if they have any determinations?
I don't know that that's a question that anyone can answer. Ultimately it's the Marine Transportation Safety Board that comes out with its determination of what ultimately occurred, what their explanation is for this. And I mean, there's still plenty more witness testimony to go over to that effect.
All right. Well, Dylan Simard from KMXT, thank you very much for distilling a week's worth of testimony for us. It must have gone on about 8 hours a day.
Oh no! It was 7 to 3, but often went to 4 p.m.
Wow, and a lot of it very emotional. Well, thanks very much for giving us kind of the big lay of the landscape. Appreciate it, Dylan.
Thank you for having me.